Tuesday morning. John Decker joining us live. Good morning, New Hampshire. The pulse of an H. And John, I hope you're doing well out of the gate this morning. A lot going on.
I'm doing well. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah. And you're paying attention to Congress back in session and the Ukrainian situation. I'm also really looking at tensions mounting and escalating in very concerning ways in the Middle East. Take it away, John.
Well, you're right about that. Now, there are talks that have been ongoing in Cairo involving our CIA director trying to have a hostage deal that would also ultimately lead to a ceasefire. So keeping our eyes on that. And then here at home, here in Washington, Congress is back. And first order of business, according to the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is legislation that would provide for funding for Ukraine. He is not taking up the legislation that has already passed the Senate with 70 votes, including 22 Senate Republicans. Instead, he's spoken about this idea of providing funding to Ukraine in the form of loans. I don't know how that's going to, you know, roll with the entire House of Representatives. I think over the course, Jack, of the next week, we'll have greater clarity in terms of what this legislation will look like and whether it can pass the House. And then it's going to look different than what the Senate did. So then whether it can pass the Senate as well to get to President Biden's desk for his signature.
All right, John Decker, I'll let you go, our own White House correspondent.
Thanks, Jack.
Did you enjoy the talk? Did you get to – oh, wait, I'm going to let John go. He's probably on the road with the covering the president. I don't know if he got to the path of totality. But anyway, Michael Graham, NH Journal, NHJournal.com. He's still seeking the path to totality in political news coverage. I think he's eclipsing most others, but he joins us now live talking about the 2nd Congressional District as well as the presidential race. Good morning, Michael.
Yeah, big news with Annie Custer coming out and endorsing Colin Ben Ostern, you know, before really anyone else has gotten in the Democratic primary. And CVO, that's the nickname that Colin's given his campaign. The CVO campaign sent out a list of 100 names and the big boost from Custer. Also on the list, Jack, a couple names you might remember. Maybe you've heard this guy, Governor John Lynch.
Yes.
Michael Vlacic, who was a longtime senior advisor to Jeanne Shaheen, and a couple of Hassan staffers. And the yogurt guy, Gary Hirschberg, who some people thought might get in the race himself because he's an outspoken progressive. But Colin Ben Ostern used to work for him. He's instead endorsing. And so that all lines up for, as one person told me this morning, the coronation has begun. Democrats are being told, this is who you are going to nominate.
Right.
Pay no attention to those Becky Whitleys out there. You've received your marching orders. And Democrats in New Hampshire are much better at being obedient than Republicans are. You know, on the Republican side, there's these constant fights between the Libertarians and the Freedom Caucus and the traditionalists and the social conservatives, and they have no problem fighting it out. Obviously, in Washington, D.C., the Republicans spend more time attacking each other than attacking Democrats, not in New Hampshire. And so, looks like Annie Custer and Jeanne Shaheen and Maggie Hassan have decided who the nominee is going to be, and it looks like progressives are going to once again roll over, despite this being a state that Bernie Sanders carried twice in the first in the nation primary.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You can see it. I think the day I heard that Custer wasn't going to run again, I was seeing this, and I think the pave of the runway was set up. Hey, let's switch gears. Yesterday there was so much eclipse mania. I think it was a little underwhelming, but it was what it was. Not a lot of people maybe analyzed or had a chance to digest what Donald Trump, the Republican presumptive nominee, had to say about abortion, and maybe the timing wasn't good, or maybe it was. I don't know. But how does what he say, is that going to satisfy? Is it going to work? Or does it open the door to even more questions? Because this is obviously, even Trump realizes, it is a motivational issue among a lot of voters, including independents, in the fall. How do you think it plays?
So here's at NHL.com, we have an article about this, Jack, and the way that we decided that Trump's position, which is leave it to the states, don't have the federal government get involved, let Utah have one set of rules and Massachusetts have another. The reason why I know that that issue has a political strength is Democrats are now insisting that that's not what he's saying. They're insisting, no, he's really secretly pro restrictions on abortion. He wants to put a ban in place. And my favorite line, Jack, I forget what, it must have been the New York Times maybe it was the Biden campaign. And you know, can you really tell the two apart? Was someone said, he's putting his politics ahead of his principles. You know, when you're arguing that Donald Trump has political principles, you've lost me. The only sincere thing
that, was pretty good,
that Donald Trump has the only sincere thing that Donald Trump has ever said about an abortion bill is somebody pay it. That's it. That's the he could care abortion the first day, last day. He doesn't care, and people know it. And by the way, that's a winner for him because Americans are very torn on this issue. They are horrified by the Democrats' position that abortion should be legal in the 8th and 9th month. They, which is why Democrats lie and say it never happens. It happens at least 1,000 times a year with elective surgeries. At least we don't know how many times in New Hampshire because Democrats won't let that information be collected. At the same time, the idea that a woman who's in her first trimester would get in trouble for having an abortion, she'd pay some price, be prosecuted. People are really bothered by that too, and so. Because Americans don't want – it's like the budget, Jack. You absolutely must cut something. Just don't cut anything I like. It's the same thing on abortion. We absolutely shouldn't have abortions that make me feel icky, but you also shouldn't make me feel icky about how we treat women either. Trump is just as confused. That's a winner for him.
I agree with you. Trump molds or bends with what he perceives – is probably a more popular path for him to be on. I don't think he has the inherent conviction here. But there are a couple things. And I might just stay with me. I know we're kind of eclipsed out. But you know how the term yesterday, eclipse, totality, I mean, through the roof. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear the word ban, abortion ban, through the roof, starting later this spring, all summer and fall. And I got to tell you, Michael, from afar, regardless of what I feel about the issue, what you feel, what my kids feel, what voters feel, it is a winning issue for Democrats. It's not for Republicans. Republicans always find themselves on the defense, even if they say, I'm in favor of New Hampshire's law, which is no restrictions through 6 months. Only in the last trimester, my opponent favors abortions as late as 9 months. The Democrat just says, my Republican opponent favors an abortion ban. They want to ban abortion, and they get away with it.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. One reason to get away with it is because, of course, there's so many media outlets who are on board helping, whether it's New Hampshire Public Radio or whether it's the Boston Globe or whether it's Concord Monitor or whatever. They're advocating this. Now, the other reason they get away with it is, as you point out, Republicans are terrible at talking about it. The only thing I can say, Jack, is when you say you're going to hear abortion ban in the spring, where are you that you're not hearing it right now? Because I'm hearing it all the time. And the analogy I make is this. Democrats want driving to be illegal. They want to ban driving. And people say, you're an idiot. No, they don't. Well, will Democrats let you drive 100 miles an hour? No. Well, they want to ban driving. And that's the same logic that they're using on abortion. If you want any restrictions, then you support. Then they want to mislead people into thinking that you oppose it entirely. But that's just what they're just going to have to deal with it. But Trump did a favor to Republicans in New Hampshire because even though you're right, they're going to be on defense, at least they're not defending a 15-week national ban. The only party that wants a national law on abortion are Democrats. Senator Shaheen, Senator Hassan, Representatives Custer and Pappas, they all support a national law that overrides New Hampshire's law and says New Hampshire doesn't get to say what happens with abortion. We want a federal law to tell you. And Republicans can just say, like you said, I support New Hampshire's law. That's the best they can do on an issue that we are either the most or second most pro-abortion state in the country. It's just the way things are. If you don't want to be a Republican running in a pro-abortion state, move somewhere else.
Yeah. All right, Michael
Graham.
By the way,
did you see the Hassan fundraising thing? Speaking of abortion.
No.
So last week, Florida's Supreme Court agreed to let a ballot measure on the ballot.
Right.
So that Floridians can vote on their abortion law, which is a 6-week ban that's going to take effect. So Florida voters, Florida court, Florida law. All of a sudden, last week, Florida voters get an email soliciting money. We've got to stand together and help this abortion law pass. We've got to fight against the extremism, blah, blah, blah. But the fundraising letter, Jack, wasn't from Florida. It was from New Hampshire. Maggie Hassan sent a fundraising letter to Florida asking them to give her money to help support the Florida law on, you know, pro-choice.
And she
promised to split the money with her after she got it.
And you know what? I love how a lot of the folks in politics talk about we need to take big money out of politics, out-of-state money, dark money. All right, thank you, Michael. We're looking at a lot of stuff, but Anna Brown, Citizens Count, with a legislative wrap-up locally and trying to track after the last week or so. Some people may have not caught it, but I had Governor Sununu on the show last week, and it seems that that attempt to legalize marijuana in New Hampshire coming out of the House Finance Committee going into the Senate is not what Governor Sununu would sign into law today, saying he would not sign that. And it's interesting because it may be a deal breaker even in the Senate. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning. Well, it's interesting, too, because Senator Daryl Abbas went to the House Finance Committee and said, here's a version of the bill that Governor Sununu would support and also can pass the Senate. And the House Finance Committee said, that's nice. We're going to go our own way. So when the bill, if assuming it passes the House, which I think it likely will, the House tends to pass marijuana legalization in many different forms. So when it gets to the Senate, of course, will have their opportunity to amend it any way they see fit. And then the House can either agree to what they passed or form a conference committee where the two chambers try to come together for a compromise. And so it still could totally change into that version that Governor Sununu would support that would pass the Senate. But it does seem, you know, the fact that the House Finance Committee isn't ready to go on board with that yet, it definitely makes it a little less likely, I think, that this is going to happen this year. Governor Sununu had said that he would support a version of it, but let's not forget, it's also, we have many years of Governor Sununu naysaying many different versions of marijuana legalization. And even when there was a study commission on this last summer and fall, even then failed to come to consensus because Governor Sununu kept on saying, well, nope, this needs to happen or this needs to change. No, I can't get on board with that. So at this point, just from the outside, I would say it's a flip of a coin, 50-50, whether or not we're actually going to get a marijuana legalization bill signed by Governor Sununu this year. It's really going to come down to if the House and the Senate, I think, can come to terms with something that Governor Sununu wants to sign. Because there are some folks in the House that really argue what he's looking for is too much of an infringement on the free market and or could run into some problems with the federal government if there's too much state involvement in something that is, of course, still illegal at the federal level.
Well, a question I've asked Anna
Brown. So that's going to be a hot one.
CitizensCount.org is if the House, and I think they will pass it, the House has a proclivity to approve this and pass it in the past. If the House really wanted this to become law this time, why did they not make this thing more something that senators and the governor could accept versus, like, in their face?
I think that ultimately at this point they know that the Senate can make any changes they want, and they know that they will have another chance to review that and potentially do the conference committee. So not to read the minds of the many different state representatives who have worked on this bill and are voting on this bill, but I would say that this is a bit of a negotiation point for them. They want to make sure that there are certain things about this bill that are a priority for them, and they want those to be acknowledged and seen and possibly included in that final version. So I think that the House of Representatives, you and I agree, they tend to they'll pass marijuana legalization in almost any form. They really, really want it to happen. But since it is early enough in the process, I see this as a way for them to kind of push their version, their agenda, a little bit farther and see how far it can go with the things that are important to their view.
All right. Now, you track several things. That was just my question to Anna Brown. What else are we missing? What else are you keying in on?
Well, one thing that is going to be big this week is there are votes in the House of Representatives around changing, or rather increasing, school funding that's coming from the state. It's a small increase in per pupil funding, and then also increases in funding for students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, and some fiscal disparity funding, which is related to towns with low property values. Now, that's not a big enough change to completely resolve these school funding lawsuits that are still making their ways through the courts, but it's still a significant change and a move once again towards increasing state funding, ideally easing up that local property tax burden. So what's notable here is it is a bill that just increases pure pupil funding, and it does seem to have bipartisan support. So I will definitely be watching that going forward. It was only a couple weeks ago that we even had a Republican moving forward with an amendment that would have done a lot more radical increases in funding, would have brought back that concept of donor towns, basically very property-rich towns, still having to give more to the state to help school districts that are in property poor towns. So I think the fact that that idea came from a Republican at all, even though that's not what we're moving forward with right now, is pretty telling that I think the House is more open to moving on school funding than ever before. So I'm going to be curious to watch that vote, see how that goes down, what they might be talking about on the House floor. A couple other bills that are interesting. There's also a bill that's coming up that would ban the sale of various products with added PFAS starting in 2027. And it came out of the House Finance Committee with a vote of 15-9. So once again, we're looking at a bipartisan support.
Great, as I drink my third plastic water bottle.
I think it's true. I feel like all of us in New Hampshire are like, yep, we got a lot of microplastics in us, and it's kind right now.
Can I just stand this one for a moment? Just for a moment,
absolutely.
Just to have some fun. It's a post-eclipse release. So people close to me who actually care about my health and well-being, and I'm humbled, said, hey, Jack, you drink a lot of water bottles of water during the show, purified water. And I go, yeah, I mean, I probably have 8 bottles of these. So including one of my kids said, no, you gotta get like a thermos thing. And a metal thing, but you can't be because of all the plastic, you know, the micro particles we hear about. So, okay, mm-hmm. So let's just say I cut down on my water bottle consumption, Anna. So I go to Hannaford to Market Basket, and I want to get, you know, a quart of orange juice. It's in a plastic bottle. I want to get Gatorade maybe mm-hmm. for electrolytes. It's in a plastic bottle. I may want to get tomato juice. Oh, it's in a plastic bottle. I may want to get, you know, something to cook at home. Oh, it's in plastic. I may want to get a roast chicken. Oh, it's wrapped in plastic. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yes, but not all of the. My understanding is not all of those plastics are necessarily going to have added PFAS. You know,
no, so not added.
Not
added. Not added. But there was a story, Aaron Rial of NBC News Radio National Correspondent scared me about a month ago. They've done studies like in some of these like juice drinks, water bottles that I'm not saying it's added stuff, but there are these micro plastic particles in these bottles,
yeah.
And it gets worse, for example, if you leave one in your car during the summer and it gets to be 80 or 90 degrees in the vehicle. So I'm just saying, I hear you, and I understand the danger to your organs of taking in more plastic, but plastic's all around us. That's all.
It's true. And there's other interesting bills, too, that I'm watching that are looking specifically around how much, once again, added PFAS, not just, you know, plastic, right. But added PFAS that's particularly in firefighter protective equipment,
mm-hmm.
and at least trying to get it so that in the future, at least that base layer that firefighters wear would not have added PFAS.
Yep.
Cosmetics with added PFAS. It's definitely sort of, you know, I kind of think about it as that pollution issue of my generation is sort of the way it feels, and it is a little scary to think about.
And then I go to the supermarket. I'm sorry, you got me going. And all the bags, you know, as we try and work on our climate, all the bags there, like you'll hear this. By the way, what you're hearing is a Hannaford thanks for shopping with us plastic bag with a lunch for later and a salad in there, which is plastic, the case. But you go there and I'm like, what happened when I was a kid? Just old fashioned like paper bags. Oh, we can't have paper. So plastic. All right, Anna, I'm going to let you go. Anything else before we go?
No, I think that, you know, the world is a great place, and hopefully all of us can consume less. That's the moral of the story.
Anna Brown, CitizensCount.org, and the path of totality. Anna Brown on public policy. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Jack.
Neil Levesque, he's found the path to totality in politics his whole adult life. It's Executive Director of Institute of Politics, St. Anselm College, joining us with some analysis on some of the political news that might have been eclipsed yesterday, Neil, with Mother Nature. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jack. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with coming out of the weekend. And I with Donald Trump, I don't assume anything. I don't think anyone does. When he's the master of media and communications and his own social media, when he came out and said he wanted to sort of release his position on abortion as the presumptive Republican nominee yesterday, I got to tell you, Neil, most people were partying and on the road or just looking at a total eclipse in the afternoon. I don't know how many people were paying attention. So did Trump do that on purpose, or did he kind of underestimate the interest of the eclipse fascination? And from what he said, because it's obviously a cutting issue right here in New Hampshire with a lot of voters, abortion rights. What do you think of his position? Does it answer enough questions? Does it open door to more questions? And the timing of it? I'll let you run with that.
Well, the people who are passionate about abortion were not distracted by an eclipse. They knew exactly what he was saying. And clearly the Republicans and Donald Trump are trying to take abortion off the table because they see it as a weakness on the general election ballot. And he's trying to sort of de-escalate or put out the fire a little bit by saying, you know, he's going to leave it up to states. Now, I think most people who are passionate about abortion on either side of the issue recognize the fact that Trump put people on the Supreme Court and they made a ruling, and this has been impactful on the issue of abortion. So you can't really get away with it. I think he's trying to mollify it a little bit so that Democrats can't use what I think is going to be their most effective weapon to defeat Trump in the fall will be the abortion issue. It's a motivating factor out there, and it gets people to the polls, and it can get people against Trump. And so he's trying to mollify it. And so whether or not this succeeds, I don't know. It was interesting that the Susan B. Anthony, which is the pro-life group, immediately, you know, cut ties with him. But I think generally, you know, you can say that if anybody's responsible for the recent court decision on abortion, it would be Donald Trump.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, I said earlier, Neil Levesque, excuse me, saying it's from college. I said earlier, you said it's a big issue for Democrats and maybe the winning issue going into the fall, or the number one they have in their arrows, if you will, or their instruments. But I'm looking at independent voters, and I do know abortion rights is the one thing that Democrats and independents will circle the wagon, even if they don't like Biden and they don't like Trump. But I'm also looking at immigration, border, southern border crisis. The economy is still expensive for most people. Two wars in the world. Major crime in major cities. And I think independent voters are going to weigh all that. So how do all those other issues weigh when it comes to the abortion rights issue as a deciding issue on who to vote for?
Well, I think you just boiled down the big question mark in the 2024 election. That is that Democrats and Republicans have two candidates that a lot of voters in the middle don't care for. And so how do you overcome the personality of the candidate at the top? And for Democrats, I think the abortion issue is the motivating factor. And on the Republican side, I think the motivating factor is this crime/rule of law immigration issue. And so both sides are going to utilize this and try to motivate those people in the middle who are undecided and not committed. And we're going to have another election where, you know, we're splitting hairs with razors. Because people are going to be deciding on people that they don't necessarily want to see as president, but an issue may motivate them. In this case, abortion for a lot of women in particular is a motivating factor. And I think it's not scientific, but there's a lot of women out there that will say, you know, I don't even care about who's running or what have you, but this issue is near and dear to me, and I'm going to vote, and I'm going to drive to the polls on it. So it's definitely a motivating factor. So as we look at the polling right now, by the way, there's all these national polls. My sister comes up to me all the time. She says, oh, my God, there's this national poll. I said, don't even look at national polls. They don't mean anything. They don't mean anything.
The only polls that matter are St. Anselm College, Institute of Politics. They're the only polls, right?
Right. But these key battleground states are what we really should be looking at. And right now, Trump has a lead. Some of the states are almost tied, and some are sort of in the margin of error. But he has had a consistent lead with these states. That being said, an issue that really they haven't motivated voters yet is abortion. And I think that issue is the key factor here for Biden's reelection.
Again, we're going to see what works, because it may only be a thin margin of voters that decide this thing if it's a close election. And you can know that in New Hampshire, in those congressional races, and I would dare say the gubernatorial, the governor's race, and now we have a race in the second congressional district, every other ad the Democrats going to be running is my Republican opponent wants to ban abortion. And the grainy video or audio make the Republican look like they want to ban abortion. And then the Republicans are going to be talking about sanctuary cities, border crisis, Bidenomics, inflation, two wars, and the independents are going to sit there and they're going to have to decide. So we'll see where it goes. No surprise, Ann Custer, who's not running in the 2nd District Democrat, endorsing Colin Van Ostern yesterday and today. Not a big surprise. I think that runway was set when she announced her retirement. But any reaction?
Well, I think we all guessed that that's what she was going to do. I think the surprise is the timing. It's about a week in. And I think the reason for doing that is to sort of shore up the fact that this is the candidate that a lot of Democrats want to see running against the Republican, and they're trying to box out other people, both here in New Hampshire and in Washington. Remember, if you go to Washington and you try to say, okay, who's going to raise some money for me nationally, and Custer's already come out and a whole bunch of other people for a different candidate, it makes it tougher. That being said, in this world in politics, to be sort of the entrenched person that the establishment supports isn't necessarily a winning issue. That isn't to be said that it isn't to the advantage to say that you're being endorsed by the incumbent. That's definitely an advantage. But certainly we've seen in politics where people reject the sort of establishment pick and people who get the endorsements. Well, that doesn't really necessarily matter to voters. So that being said, Van Ostern so far with a week out, he's raised a lot of money. He's got a lot of endorsements. Basically, he's doing everything right. So good for him, and good for him getting this endorsement.
All right, Neil Levesque, St. Anselm College Institute of Politics. Enjoy the beautiful day today. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Jack.
Mike Cody, he's the editor of New Hampshire Business Review, New Hampshire Magazine. Big event coming up, and we'll talk some business. Mike, good Tuesday morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, and great segue for your veterans event. We have our new New Hampshire 200 book coming out on Friday, and we have a big event on Thursday celebrating this year's honorees. We do this every 2 years. And among the people we are celebrating, Julie and Phil Tom of Swim with a Mission, the co-founders of Swim with a Mission, as your listeners know, very, very involved in helping provide veteran services, trying to fill in the gaps for the services that aren't available. And they're among the folks we'll be celebrating.
Yeah, and you know, it's good stuff on that, by the way. And how can people get the book?
Well, it comes out in the next issue of New Hampshire Business Review on Friday. It's all the list is online, but the book has short profiles of everybody who we're featuring in this particular edition. We do it every 2 years. The first two had some overlap. This time we decided, you know what, we're going to find 200 people who have not been celebrated before. And I'm sure there are more people who are worthy of that, but there are folks who, why weren't they in here before? You know, for example, Cheryl McQuaid, who's the president of New England for TD Banks, is among the folks, and she's been very active with the Business and Industry Association as well. There are people from nonprofits, manufacturing, Adria and Aaron Bagshaw, for example, fifth-generation owners of the W.H. Bagshaw Company in Nashua are among our recipients in the manufacturing category, financial services, things like that. And we have more than 600 people coming to the Capone Center on Thursday.
Good stuff. Hey, Michael, I don't know about yesterday if you got into the path of totality, but I have not seen, I don't know if you heard of my show at the Open this morning, I have not seen traffic Sunday into Monday, including when I was leaving yesterday afternoon, still people trying to get up into the northern tip of Coos County for a couple minutes of maybe darkness. I got to tell you, I'm talking peak leaf foliage peeping in the fall, Franconia Notch on a Saturday morning when the foliage is at a 10 and it's sunny out and beautiful. I'm talking when New Hampshire Motor Speedway was the magic mile and you had 100,000 people coming in. I've never seen this. I haven't gotten the numbers from the state yet on how many, but it had to be over 100,000. If nothing else, it was an economic boom for the North Country.
Sure, it comes in the shoulder season, right? The winter's ending. There aren't very many ski resorts left. I think Loon closes on Monday. the eclipse brought all these people up here. And she said, I think only Taylor Swift or somebody like that would bring all that kind of traffic. The trick is, what can we find in New Hampshire to bring that kind of excitement, right? For this is an event that was over and done in a matter of minutes. And you know, we had traffic going forever and ever all through the state.
Interesting. All right. Well, as far as anything else we have going on, you know, real quickly, your role now, you're overseeing New Hampshire Magazine and New Hampshire Business. Just talk about those mediums a little bit. I know we talked about the history of the company that owns you, but just a little bit about the New Hampshire Magazine and the New Hampshire Business Review and where you're taking it.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a lot of overlap because I'm overseeing both those publications, and probably more so than there has been in the past. For example, I mentioned the Bagshaws, and their company makes pins, you know, for manufacturing, you know, specialized parts that are used for all kinds of applications. But a few years ago, they launched a wooden bat-making company, WH Bat, I believe it's called, and a Walter Bat Company. And they're featured in our May issue of New Hampshire Magazine, along with a profile of an amateur baseball league in the Seacoast region. So, you know, we're just looking for what's the best display, what's the story, where does it fit? You know, and both New Hampshire Magazine, New Hampshire Business Review, we have a lot of events associated with our publications. So there's a lot of community engagement with everything we do. We also have 603 Diversity, which is a quarterly magazine that is inserted in both those publications. And we do specialty work. So the Boston Marathon on Monday, the program is produced by our company.
Wow. Can't believe it. Red Sox home opener today. And again, if people want to get that book coming out, best way is how?
NHBR.com.
Good stuff, Michael. I appreciate it. You have a great Tuesday. Enjoy the weather. It's absolutely gorgeous out there today. So enjoy it.
Thanks, Jack. You too. Take care.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. And insurance companies monitoring a little more aggressively the home and even the property, the things on the roof and the yard they're insuring. Good morning, Rory.
Yeah, Jack. A great story from the Wall Street Journal this week talking about how insurance companies are now relying on surveillance tech, drones, planes, even high-altitude balloons to take pictures of our homes from above and then decide from those aerial photos whether or not to dump your policy, maybe increase your rates. Insurance companies say, hey, look, we've been sending out adjusters to homes to try to set rates for years, but this is a whole new way of using technology, and the industry is coming together to fund a group called the, get this, the Geospatial Insurium. It sounds like a Bond villain, but
What is that one more time? Geospatial
the
what?
Geospatial Insurance Consortium.
Wow. Doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me. Rory O'Neill. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Brad Card, one of our political analysts and all-stars, Card and Associates. He uses some of these balloons and surveillance instruments to spy on his golf opponents with the Masters starting Thursday. Brad's trying to make – he's trying to be a walk-on at the Masters, but he doesn't have an exemption. Brad, a lot going on politically.
I got to scope out the courses. Now, that's what I would use it for. Perfect.
No, seriously, because I know you have – I know this. A great buddy, great friend of mine for life. I don't even know. Have you been to the Masters? I don't even know that.
I have not. I would love to go.
Wow. I thought you would have, because the one thing I hear – let's take a moment. We'll get to the political stuff. Because I'm excited already for Thursday. I've even looked at the forecast and – Augusta, Georgia, to see. I think the only questionable day will be Thursday, but I think it's going to be a great one, unpredictable. But what I hear from my brother-in-law, who plays almost like you, too much golf, if there's such a thing, it is really hilly, and you don't really get – you get that a little bit, but you don't. It's really hilly, and some of those greens is like four different shelves on them.
Well, that's what everybody says. Everybody says by far it's the most beautiful course, most well-manicured course, but it's very, very hilly. It's great. It's probably it's like the Mecca for golf. If you get to play there, it's great. I had a client that was going to take me there, and then he got very sick and couldn't go, unfortunately, so I couldn't go. But I would have had to play it, and it would have been great. But anyway.
Well, I don't know if the House Speaker's going anywhere soon. Tell us the latest out of D.C.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene is charging full steam ahead on her motion to vacate. She sent around a dear colleague criticizing in a rambling form Mike Johnson and likes to talk about things that she has no clue about. She talks about how when Newt Gingrich was there, how they were able to accomplish some things. But she doesn't talk about other things. You can go through any piece of legislation and find things in a bill that you don't like. There's no question about it, especially an omnibus bill, especially when you have appropriation bills coming up. And you don't control the Senate. You don't control the White House. So she's found her little nuggets that she likes to say, are so bad in these appropriation bills, and they're so abhorrent. And I would personally agree. Some of those are not very good. But you're going to shut the government down and cost billions of dollars in revenue and quite frankly, hinder our national defense, everything. It is a reason why she should not be in Congress, and she's not fit to be in Congress, in my opinion. But anyway, I digress, and she's going to try to bring this up, and she may be successful. And if she gets the speaker out of there goes the entire House. Keep in mind what we're talking about. In the last 18 years, last nine Congresses before the 118th Congress that we're in right now, this is overwhelmingly the most unproductive Congress, like not even close. And in the 117th Congress, they passed 336 pieces of legislation that were enacted into law. 116th, 344. The 115th Congress, 443. Guess how many pieces of legislation have been enacted into law that has been passed in the 118th Congress, Jack? Take a guess.
I don't. I mean, it's been a trend we've seen for a while, but tell us.
27.
Wow.
27. This is the most unproductive Congress we've ever had. I mean, but it's because we have lunatics that want to shut things down and they don't know how to legislate. The answer is no. Look, you can find something wrong in every single bill.
Well,
if you're looking for perfect legislation, I mean, compromise has become such a dirty word in Washington, D.C. But Republicans have a one-seat majority. They don't control the Senate and they don't control the White House, yet some of these members think that they're going to drive an agenda that is ultra-partisan and is actually going to become law. It's just not living in reality.
But you know what? It almost reflects the presidential election, just how divided things are. Let's switch gears, Brad. I don't underestimate Donald Trump, as I said earlier, when it comes to marketing and media. He's kind of a genius in that regard, if you don't like him. But this whole eclipse yesterday, now, I don't know. It wasn't as big of a deal where you are, but Northern New Hampshire, as you know, and Northern New England or Burlington, Vermont.
It was a big deal, Jack. Basically, the government shut down for like 45 minutes, I think. Everybody was outside with their glasses on. It was a big deal.
Brad, it was the world shut down. I'm like, what is going on? But did Trump underestimate the eclipse mania to release his abortion position? What's your reaction to it? Mike Pence has already slammed it for it. Trump is very cognizant. Abortion rights are a hot-button issue for a lot of voters that he's going to need beyond his base. What are your thoughts on his timing yesterday?
I'm super critical of Donald Trump, as you know. But I will tell you, this is a smart thing. It should go to the states. Every place that abortion has been on the ballot, the anti-abortion folks have lost. Right? Susan B. Anthony folks have lost. And they've lost badly.
But do you think they've lost in ruby red states. Do you think what he did yesterday it sort of helps his cause on getting elected or not?
Yes, I think it helps. It's going to help him with rural women, with women in suburban neighborhoods. Certainly, I think it helps him with women. And unfortunately, a lot of our elected. I'm a pro-life guy, but I am pro-life with exceptions, which is not nearly adequate enough for the Susan B. Anthony folks and folks that are hardcore pro-life. And I respect people that disagree with me on it. It's a very tough political issue, and it's a very passionate political issue. So I think Donald Trump is right where he's come down on. He's saying, look, states should decide this. I agree with that. That's what actually getting rid of Roe v. Wade, overturning Roe v. Wade, was not overturning and approving, saying that abortion should be illegal. It's just the state should control it.
I know,
but
you know that's not how a lot of people, certainly the Democrats, take it. All right, Brad, we got to run. I'll talk to you, of course, because we are closer to the Masters. Why don't you go there and do some play-by-play there with Jim Nantz?
Like to.
All right, thanks, Brad. Cardin Associates. Do we have APX, CJ?
Good morning.
Yes, her code name out of Langley is APX. Did you seek the path to totality, Alicia?
Only in my mind, Jack. No, we did not go up to the North Country for it. We debated it. We were going to. My nephew really wanted to see it. We were all going to trek up there. And about 4 days ago, I said, we can leave at 3 a.m. and get up there. We ain't never getting home. And looking at some friends on Twitter who got home at 4:30 this morning, spent 10 hours in their car, things like that, I'm like, woo, did we make the right decision? But we had a great New Hampshire experience, a little bit inland from where I'm at, watching about a 95% eclipse, and it was awesome.
Okay, okay. Can we move on from the eclipse, even though there's a lot of songs about it? You know,
Can I tell you a little? I love this.
Yeah, keep going.
So on Saturday, we're like, my nephew's really into this. He's disappointed we're not going up there because it's just crazy to do so. We got to find a cool experience. So we drive around, you know, south central New Hampshire, we'll call it. And I'm not going to say the town in case what we did was illegal. But we find this little field with one soccer field and one baseball field. And what looks like it used to be a quarry. But the dirt road going down into it, you can't get into because of recent storms. It's covered with fallen trees. Mm-hmm. But we decide this is the perfect place. So my husband gets out of the car, and he's like, I'm going to move the damn tree. So he's out there ripping limbs and whatnot, and all of a sudden the car pulls up, and these two kids are in there, maybe 19 years old. And they shout out to him, and they go, hey, we've got a hacksaw. And he's like, bring it on over. For the next hour, the three of them are sitting there cutting the trees off the access road, removing them. And we just loved it. We were like, where else are you going to get a couple kids showing up with a hacksaw to be like, I'll help you out, old man. And it was awesome.
Come on, you got to tell us where.
It was in Raymond at something called, I think, Cammett Field. And the best part was I was worried we were going to be there for hours and there's no bathroom. But because we cleared the road, apparently, the morning of the eclipse, 3 porta potties were delivered. And we're like, yes. So we put up our table and chairs. We had a picnic. We played some soccer and we watched the eclipse 95%. And it was great. And we just kept going, man, we love the 603.
So what I don't understand, because you know me well, better than most. Yesterday morning, early, I get on a 93 North from 101 coming from the coast, like you go, and it's a parking lot, and it was a parking lot Sunday afternoon. I leave our main, I'm broadcasting today out of Studio 2 in Dover, I leave Concord, our headquarters, yesterday at about 1, parking lot is still packed going north for a 3:30 event. Can you explain to me, and I mean packed, like more traffic than I've seen for anything, including like peak leaf season, foliage season in the fall, sporting events, 95 south out of Maine on a Sunday afternoon in the summer. I mean, it was packed. So why would you wait 3 or 4 hours in traffic to go to Lancaster, New Hampshire, when you can go to Raymond and with a hacksaw make your own pit and seats for 96% viewing for another 4? I'm just curious. What is this cool path to totality? You got to be in the path. Is that a new, like, cult I'm not aware of?
Look, I don't want to insult those who did it because we thought of it, too, until what we consider common sense hit our brain and we're like, we're not spending 20 hours in the car for this. You know what's funny? And, again, I don't want to insult anybody, but people don't think outside the box anymore. I mean, I called the Deerfield Fairgrounds and said, Are you guys going to be open for the eclipse? So I'm like, that would be a brilliant idea. You guys can make money, bring in vendors. And they were like, no, it's private property. I'm like, okay, well, we won't come then. But I'm thinking, why didn't some of these places get creative?
You're more right than you know. In the afternoon, because I had some business calls, and I'm working out. This is post 3:30, and I'm watching the networks. One of the networks did an interview with the general manager of Jay Peak up in Vermont, and that's exactly what they did. What you just said, the Deerfield Fairgrounds should have done. They opened up their resort for eclipse seekers, viewers, guests, residents, their overnight condos, rentals, and they had a great couple days. And he said it really made the entire season for them revenue-wise.
Yeah. I don't know why people, whether it's, you know, we got to go to totality or what. Maybe some people just wanted to, right? But for others, particularly for business owners, I don't understand why they think, why didn't Hampton Beach? I said this to some local people. I said, why didn't y'all start promoting? It's 95%. Come to Hampton Beach. Businesses are starting to open. And there was, I don't know, it was almost like the eclipse came up too fast. And we were like, oh, shoot, we didn't do anything about it. Okay.
I don't get it. And the other thing I don't get, I think people are just looking for a reason to party. Take some, you know, just any diversion to escape reality these days, they'll take. But, you know, the other thing is in 2017, we had one. Why was this one? Why was the hoopla so big? And I guess part of it is because the thing with the path was going over more populated areas in our country. That's the only reason.
I think that's part of it. It was up here instead of in the South. But I think it's more to what you said before. Look, things, no matter what eggheads and, you know, and economists are saying right now, for a lot of us, things aren't great. The inflation is still affecting us. Mm-hmm. You know, wages have not gone up as significantly as inflation has. We're feeling a pinch. There's a lot of negativity in the world, whether it's in our own political divisiveness in the United States or whether it's in Ukraine or Israel and Gaza and now Iran's raising their head. There's a lot of negative going on.
Good point.
We found a way to come up with something maybe we can all unite on, do something different, get out of the mundane, stop watching the news, and just have a little bit of fun doing something. And I think it might be more to that.
I think it's right. I mean, look at the Super Bowl's record viewership, but I think a lot of it is, you know, not everyone. I went to a different house than the group I was with, family, because I wanted to watch the game. 9 out of 10 people, they don't even know. They know about Taylor Swift and the Chiefs a little bit, but they don't even, they just want to guacamole and party. They just want to escape. Yeah. All right. What else? What else is catching your eye?
You know, I don't know, on the TV now are the victim impact statements from that crumbly shooter that killed 4 high school students, and the parents were the first time ever held responsible. I wasn't on the jury. I've got mixed reviews on where this goes, but I got to say, watching the impact statements, it's hard to not understand what the prosecution did here. And that's what I was watching this morning.
All right. And then here's a fun lightning round question to get you at the end. It's early, but we're talking path to totality, dude. It's early. It's early. You ready? You ready? You're not going to expect this question. It's early. It's only, what is it, April 9th?
Yeah.
If you had to say today, not what you want, but you had to say today, Alicia, you have good instincts. Who's the next president of the United States?
I don't know.
That's a good answer.
It may not be either one.
That's a good, that's an honest answer. Okay. Here's one more, because you've weighed in on this. You're supportive of it. You're involved from a public policy, a public affairs. Does New Hampshire legalize marijuana now with the House Finance Committee for recreational use this spring, yes or no?
80% yes, but it won't be what it looks like now.
Well, you're answering questions today.
I'm in post-eclipse joy mode right now. I'm feeling good.
Why don't you go look for some, some crab shells on the beach for your dog?
I think I might. We might just go crab walking right now.
All right. Thank you, APX. Alicia Preston Zanthopoulos. Check out her written and spoken word, Seacoast Online.